This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at numberfire.com, and this is episode 142 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the Number Fire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Before I get into the questions for this week's mailbag show, I wanted to let you guys know that I'm going to be posting my tiered rankings for Number Fire Premium members on Monday. They'll be posted alongside Jim Sonnis and Brandon Gadula's, so you guys can see how we're thinking individually, not just how Number Fire's algorithm is thinking. And speaking of which, you guys should try out Number Fire Premium. We've got betting picks and advice for the World Cup, every PGA tournament, and day in and day out for Major League Baseball. Plus, we've already got our premium NFL draft kit ready to go if you're trying to get a head start with fantasy football, which you probably are since you're listening to this podcast in June. But first-time users can use promo code CLUTCH at checkout and get your first month of premium for just $7.95. That's promo code CLUTCH. Visit numberfire.com/premium for more details. The first question in this week's mailbag says, "Hey JJ, love the succinct nature of the show and your commitment to teaching the process for making the best decisions in our fantasy football leagues. Your latest show on choosing keepers was very informative, and I'm hoping you can take it one step further by talking a bit about draft strategy when in a keeper league. For example, assuming most keeper leagues have some sort of cost associated with keeping a player, such as assessing a round penalty greater than or equal to where the player was drafted the previous season, would it be wise to draft your kicker in defense before the final two rounds of your draft? I may be overthinking this here, but players more than likely are not keeping their kicker or defense year over year, and with most later round picks being dart throws anyway, wouldn't using your final two picks on high upside lottery tickets be a better strategy as it could provide a massive value for following seasons if they hit? Thank you for your time and dedication to the game, Richard." I think what you're saying is logical and makes a ton of sense. My only pushback would be that there's really not that big of a difference between something like the 13th round and the 15th round. Like, your expected output at a random position will be almost identical because we know the majority of players who are drafted that late won't be all that fantasy relevant. So while I think it's something that you might consider, especially if you can keep these players year after year after year, I wouldn't alter my current season draft strategy all that significantly because my fear would be that I start to be suboptimal in that current season while I'm drafting. This next question says, "JJ, my question is about auction drafts. How do you balance the position budgets, how much I'm allotting to spend by position, and players that I'm targeting? I understand the need to adapt and be flexible as prices for top of the position costs move from expected prices, but being patient and sticking too much to my plan can price me out of the top five at a position. What makes a player a must draft for you if the price creeps over estimated value? Ren." I think the problem that you're running into is that you're targeting specific players instead of letting the draft unfold for you. When I go into a draft, I don't say, "I want these six or seven guys, therefore I must get these six or seven guys." For two reasons. First, I'm going to be wrong about players, and when I go in targeting specific guys, I'm not allowing for that. I'm assuming that I'm right. But second, prices can change. A player may go for more auction dollars than I thought, and if that happens for every single player that I want, I'm then overpaying drastically across my roster. I don't go into a draft saying, "I want these three or four guys." I go into a draft with a large consideration set because variance exists, and I then let the market set itself as the draft is going on. I go in with a strategy, but that strategy doesn't involve very specific players. That's why I always say that you need to adapt and be flexible no matter the draft format. You can certainly have targets that you want, but you should never be arrogant to the point where we're doubling the cost of a player simply because we really want that player. This is why I really do prefer auction drafts, because it forces you to know exactly how you feel about a certain player. So my answer to this one is don't have that much of a plan and don't tie yourself too strongly to the idea of getting specific players. We tier players for a reason. Tiers are there to designate players who we view similarly. There's no reason then to spend a ton of money on a particular player in a particular tier versus another one in that same tier. Just let go of that one player and get another one in his tier. That will help you not overspend on players in an auction draft. This next one says, "JJ, love the podcast and how you're trying to educate your listeners on the process of examining fantasy football instead of just giving us guys you like. Very informative. Thanks. You always say to look at what a team does to help anticipate how certain players will perform in the coming year. By that notion, San Francisco spending big money on Jerick McKinnon, releasing Carlos Hyde, spending no draft picks at running back, and having Kyle Shanahan as their head coach would all help justify McKinnon's status as a late second round pick. But what about looking at it from Minnesota's standpoint? McKinnon had a golden opportunity in 2016 when Adrian Peterson went down in week two. And while his numbers were the best on the team, his play wasn't good enough to keep Matt Asiata off the field. Then in the offseason, the Vikings signed a back in free agency in Latavius Murray, and then they drafted another one in Dalvin Cook. I'm not saying that McKinnon won't deliver on his second round ADP, but maybe I'm just a bit extra cautious, having waited for him to seize opportunity that was really just lightly grabbed. Is my caution justified, or am I just nitpicking? Thanks, Reed. So this is a tough one to answer. I agree with you. I think we shouldn't just assume a player is really good when a team had just let him go. That's why I really like looking at what teams are doing in the draft, because there's no history for that player. He's a rookie. He's a first-year guy. He's never played in the league. So we have no history of a team liking him or not liking him. But I also never think that we can make blanket statements about situations like this. As in, yes, I do believe that we have to look at how Minnesota viewed McKinnon and factor that in. But I don't think the decision to let go of a player is the same across all instances where a player was let go. There are influences outside of talent that forces those decisions at times. Like Minnesota, for instance, may just not have seen McKinnon's potential. Or maybe they would have re-signed him had they not hit with Dalvin Cook. Maybe Kyle Shanahan realized McKinnon's talent last season, but by that point it was too late for Minnesota to give McKinnon a contract because they had something special with Dalvin Cook. So overall, it's a great, great point to make and should be part of the discussion. But it's a lot easier to look at the team getting the player because we know their reasoning. They really like that player. That's why they're going out and getting him. On the flip side, teams releasing players aren't always releasing them because they're no longer good. That's not always the case. This next question is from Twitter from @PFButler. How do we assess Sammy Watkins? I like his talent, but was looking at Chiefs targets, and they have one of the league's fewest air yards and targets that have opportunity to be replaced. Chiefs have a tight end one, wide receiver one, and RB1 being drafted ahead of him, and a new quarterback. Anything to compare to? I don't know if there's anything to precisely compare this Sammy Watkins situation to, but I do think he's the better value when compared to his teammate Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill last year scored all of his touchdowns from 30 or more yards out. He had 4 red zone targets. 4. Virgil Green had as many red zone targets as Tyreek Hill did. You could look at that in 2 different ways. On one hand, you could say, man, Tyreek Hill was super fantasy relevant last year despite not seeing many red zone looks. What happens when he actually does? Or you could look at it from the other side, which is how I see it, and say Tyreek Hill is bound to regress in the big play department, and they just added another weapon who can take away more looks from him. In all honesty, I think Tyreek Hill is pretty overvalued at his current ADP. And I think Sammy Watkins is the better draft pick between the two players. And that's mostly based on cost. I think it's very easy to see a scenario where Sammy Watkins has a larger target share than Tyreek Hill does, which in turn means it's very possible for Sammy Watkins to just flat out outscore Tyreek Hill. I do think this is where looking at vacated targets to make decisions can be tough, though. Target distributions shift. They'll shift when pieces are added or removed. I'm not saying that doing an exercise where you find the biggest gaps in targets from one year to the next by team is a bad thing to do or wrong. I'm just saying that they're borderline irrelevant if you're going to go through the process of making projections, or if you're projecting a player in general. What we know is that Kansas City has 3 targets who should demand a significant target share, and then they have a running back who will need touches as well. Given Mahomes is an inexperienced passer, and as much as I love the guy, it seems reasonable to think that one or two of the highly drafted Chiefs players won't live up to expectation. And my money's on Tyreek Hill given the obvious regression. And the other thing that I want to just throw out there is that I think a lot of fantasy owners assume Tyreek Hill is the perfect match for Pat Mahomes, so maybe regression won't hit as a result of that. You're pairing a big play receiver with a big-armed quarterback. That's true, but let's not forget that Alex Smith was arguably the best deep ball passer in the league last season. It's actually not going to be very easy for Pat Mahomes to match what Alex Smith did in 2017 with the deep ball. That's just another reason that Tyreek Hill may not live up to his ADP. This next one is from @KFBNFL. JJ, great work. Love the podcast. Quick question. 8-team league, you get to pick which spot you draft. What's the ideal spot to choose, and is it based solely on the player in round 1, or do you think about the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th rounds too? I think looking at all the early rounds is important with these types of decisions. But I know that first and foremost, elite running backs have provided the most significant edge in fantasy football over the last decade plus. Or at least research that I've done has shown that. So I'd want a piece of one of the top four running backs. I do prefer Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley ahead of David Johnson and Ezekiel Elliott, but if you can get one of those players, that's ideal. And since it's just an eight-team league, your second and third round picks should actually be pretty strong. I usually am not totally in love with the options in the early third round in a 12-team league, but in an eight-teamer, the front part of your draft is really, really nice. That's where I'd like to pick. This next question is from Twitter from @JevTalkToMe. Can you explain why in drafts you won't reach for a, quote, onesie position? Feels like Gronk in the second is a great pick, but I wanted your thoughts. Thanks from a fellow Mighty Ducks 2 fanatic. This all goes back to opportunity cost and supply and demand. When you know that you can get a viable option at a onesie position late in your draft, your opportunity cost is then higher when you draft that position early. This is what I talked about on the Superflex episode a couple of weeks ago. I don't love value-based drafting for reasons that I've shared many times on this podcast, but it is effective in answering this type of question. Let's say that Gronk is giving you a 120-point advantage over a replacement-level player, and a running back at that same point in the draft is giving you a 100-point advantage. Value-based drafting would tell you that Gronk is the pick. But the problem is that you're not factoring in replaceability or when you can get that replacement-level player. If the replacement-level player at running back is being drafted in round 5, but at tight end it's in round 10, then your opportunity cost becomes higher when you decide to pick a tight end. You can get a viable replacement-level option later. That devalues onesie positions. Now, I will say it's a little bit different with tight ends because the position isn't as predictable and replaceable as something like quarterback. Whereas something like 25 quarterbacks are going to be super relevant in fantasy football this year, we may only get a handful of tight ends. And quarterback is easier to stream just because they're more predictable each week. That's what makes Gronk more valuable than someone like Aaron Rodgers, even if they both play onesie positions. So I can't totally hate on Gronk in the late second or early third round. Now, I used to hate Gronk when he was a first round pick back in the day, but he's being valued properly in my opinion, just given the fact that tight end is such a dumpster fire. But that's why I devalue onesie positions. And that's also not the most detailed answer that I can give you. Instead, I would go listen back to the Superflex podcast from a couple of weeks ago, where I walk through why you should be drafting your quarterback late in single quarterback leagues. It goes over all of these concepts. This last question is from @IPlayForKeepers. Does it make sense to draft Ingram early to make sure you get him if you own Kamara? Ingram is discounted because of suspension and has standalone value and is injury insurance for Alvin Kamara. Okay, so here's the thing. It's 100% true that you could have dominated in fantasy football last year if you had both Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara. I actually won a league because I had both of those players. But I don't advocate stacking backfields, especially when you have to use early round equity to do so. And it's because it caps your overall upside. If you own both Ingram and Kamara, that means you're drafting them as starters and you'd want to play both of them in your lineup each week. It's certainly possible that they do what they did in 2017 and they're both super relevant during the same weeks. But we have examples of this on other teams where that's not the case, and because of that, it caps your overall upside. The best example is probably Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. You have Freeman as an early round pick, and you have Tevin Coleman in that sixth round range. Over the last three seasons, so the 3 years that Tevin Coleman has been in the league, Freeman and Coleman have played 35 games together when excluding week 17 in the playoffs. In those 35 games, they've both finished as a top 24 running back or an RB2 just 5 times together. They did it once last year, 4 times in 2016 when the Falcons' offense was insane, and 0 times during Tevin Coleman's rookie season. And it's not like these guys have zero standalone value. Tevin Coleman has 14 top 24 performances over the last 2 seasons. Devontae Freeman has 19. But when they've played together, they've both finished as a top 24 running back only 5 times. This makes complete sense intuitively. If one player on a team is usable, it's going to be very difficult for the other player to be as well because there are only a certain number of plays being run in an offense per game, let alone a certain number of plays being run for a running back in that offense. It's fine if you want to draft Ingram because you see him as a value and you want valuable pieces on your team. But I don't like the idea of having the 2 teammates on your squad when you know that when one of them is touching the ball, that means the other one isn't. And that can realistically limit weekly upside even though it didn't really limit upside in 2017. That's it for today's show. Thanks again for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And when you're on iTunes, make sure you're leaving me a rating and review. I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. I'm also on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Follow me on there. Otherwise, everyone, enjoy your weekend.